So in reflecting on this this term that we're going to be exploring, this aspect of mindfulness, this aspect of a way of knowing, the term clear comprehension, fully aware, sometimes it's translated as that. Most of the, or the, one of the key places that this term is found is in the Satipatthana Sutta, the instructions that the Buddha offered for mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. And it's one of several terms, I believe Gil mentioned this yesterday, one of several terms that are used to describe what mindfulness is, how, or what this establishment of mindfulness, the qualities that are useful to establish mindfulness. There's several qualities that that the suttas point to. I'll read this little section to you. One abides, contemplating the body as the body, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. And that's repeated for the other three foundations. One abides, contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware and mindful, or ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Likewise with mind states and with dhammas. We could, the translation of dhammas is sometimes it's translated as mind objects, but it can just be experience. You know, the word dhamma can just be experience. And so we could look at this definition of establishing mindfulness. One abides contemplating experience as experience, ardent, fully aware and mindful. And so this phrase is the description, what the Buddha says is important about establishing wise mindfulness, how we establish mindfulness that is supportive for freedom. And so it's sometimes worth looking at, it's useful to look at the various qualities that the Buddha points to here. I sometimes give a whole talk on this phrase and unpack each of those words. And in here, we're just basically going to take one word of that phrase and unpack it over the course of many days. So I did want to just put it in the context of this phrase, though, the term clear comprehension in the context of this phrase. And so the definition of establishing mindfulness includes abiding, observing experience as experience. So abiding maybe gives a sense of settling back, relaxing. Abide with experience. Abide observing experience. And not just observing experience, observing it as experience. That's actually important, that distinction. It may sound like just stating the obvious, but it actually is an important piece of the looking at our experience. We aren't typically, before we meet mindfulness practice, we aren't typically looking at or observing experience as experience. Oh, this anger is arising. Oh, what is the anger like as anger? More typically, we are interested in what does this anger mean about me? What can I do about it? What can I accomplish or fix or change? And so we typically, even if we become aware of something, some state of mind or some experience, we aren't just simply curious, what is this experience as an experience? We're interested in what it means about me, how it affects me, how it relates to me. And so this is an important part of this definition. One abides observing experience as experience. Ardent, this quality of interest, of diligence, of of connectedness, of energy, of persistence. Kind of a balanced but sustained intentionality behind the practice, a sustained connection to the to experience as experience. This part's important too in terms of establishing mindfulness. The establishment of mindfulness, we can say, is really it's kind of the aim of our practice, of what we're doing here. We don't do the establishment of mindfulness, but we set conditions up such that mindfulness will become established. This continuity of mindfulness, continuity of attentiveness, a continuity of being aware of experience as experience in the present moment. And then the next phrase, one abides, observing, experience as experience, ardent, clearly comprehending. Gil mentioned this, the kind of the derivation or the translation of this word, or the different parts of this word, sampajanya. The kind of two parts to the word, pajanya, connected to the word for knowing, pajanati. So the word sampajanya has knowing in it. And the first part of the word, my understanding, is the sam part. As a kind of an, it's kind of an intensification, or sometimes we could use the word, the translation with knowing. So kind of a really knowing, or fully knowing, clearly knowing. So one abides, observing experience as experience, connected, really knowing, fully knowing, and mindful. So the word mindful in here, I mean, actually, none of these words are defined here. They are used as if we already understand what they mean. Mindful, the word mindful, sati, the Pali sati, is related to a word that is connected to memory. And in one place in the suttas, the Buddha talked about mindfulness being that quality that let us remember things that happened long ago. And so in that definition, it even connected it with this aspect of memory. Bhikkhu Inalio mentions or points out that the quality of mindfulness is that functioning in the mind that facilitates and enables memory. So, I'm not sure exactly what mindfulness is. I have a sense of it in my own experience as being more receptive, not an active quality so much, but more of an establishment of a state of receptive knowing experience in the present moment. In an article that Bhikkhu Inalio wrote on clear comprehension, he actually pointed to this aspect, this receptive quality in mindfulness, as being one of the main kind of differences or an aspect of mindfulness, that in distinction to attention and in distinction to clear comprehension. he points to the clear comprehension as bringing the wisdom in to the whole exploration of becoming, establishing mindfulness with these four foundations. So as I mentioned, this particular text doesn't describe or define any of these terms. It just uses them. And there's a number of places that this term, clear comprehension, is used in the suttas where it doesn't really define the term in those places either, but it kind of gives us a little flavor of what it... of the function it serves. And so just to kind of do a little bit of a scan through some of the places or ways that the term is used to help us maybe unpack or get a sense of the quality. It's this quality of clear comprehension. How does it inform our practice? How does it inform our mindfulness? Also in the Satipatthana Sutta, one of the main, maybe the first way many of us learn about this term, clear comprehension, is in the foundation of the body, where it describes a practice of full awareness with respect to the body. So I'll read this, and this is in reference to, it's stated in reference to a bhikkhu, but the commentaries make the point that any place it says bhikkhu, that if one is practicing sincerely, that this applies to you as well. So we can substitute practitioner here, except there is one little piece of this that refers specifically to a monastic. But I will just read it in terms of bhikkhu. A bhikkhu is one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending their limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing their robes and carrying the outer robe and bowl, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food, and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. So again, the term full awareness isn't defined here, and yet we are encouraged to do it all day long. This list of activities, I'm pretty sure that at any point in the day, what you are doing is found in this list. Whether you are walking or standing or sitting or lying down, that's one aspect of this list. Or whether you are speaking or keeping silent, that's another aspect of this list. Whether you're extending or bending your limbs, keeping still. So this is an encouragement to basically practice all day long. So this is really an encouragement for continuity of our practice. And yet again, the phrase acts in full awareness. Again, maybe we can just think about it in terms of with knowing, using that. One acts with knowing going forward and returning. One acts with fully knowing looking ahead and looking away. So it gives us a little bit of a sense of conscious awareness. When reaching, know that you're reaching. When talking, know that you're talking. When standing, know that you're standing. And in fact, in the prior exercise on the postures, that's exactly the way it's put, only it doesn't use the term Sampajanya, it uses the term pajanati. When walking, a bhikkhu knows I am walking. When standing, one understands I am standing. And this seems to extend this part of the teaching seems to extend it to more activities, and seems to intensify the knowing a little bit. The Bhikkhu Anālayo says that in particular this is seeming to create a sense of, for the bhikkhus in particular, a sense of skillful deportment in terms of how they are as they're engaging in their day. So that it's almost as if we are, seeing ourselves from the outside, in a way. What does it mean to act in full awareness? It's one simple way. Know that you are walking while you're walking. Know that you're reaching while you're reaching. Know that you're talking while you're talking. Believe me, if you do that, even at that simple level, wow, your mindfulness will get really strong. It doesn't have to be, the practice doesn't have to be a really kind of tightly focused kind of attention. Know that you're talking while you're talking. On this retreat, that may be a part of your retreat. Some of you living with others. When you're eating, when you're preparing your food, when you're washing your dishes, know that that's what you're doing. Just that simple, that simpleness of it can be extremely powerful. In another place in the suttas, it uses this term in maybe a little bit of a surprising way. It refers to being fully aware while lying. Being fully aware while speaking falsehood. There's a famous sutta of the Buddha talking to his son, and saying, very little is the recluseship of one who is not ashamed to tell a deliberate lie. And that word, deliberate, there is a translation of sampajanya. There's another place where it mentions the same thing. It says somebody being questioned, asking if they know, saying I do not know, or not seeing, says I see, says this in full awareness, speaking falsehood for their own ends or another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. So this gives the notion of really being very consciously aware of doing something. And to me, this also points to the fact that clear comprehension itself, because it's used in this way, it's used in connection with an unwholesome activity. Clear comprehension itself, at least in the suttas, it seems to be a neutral term. So it's important to understand how we clearly comprehend experience. It's not just deliberate knowing what's happening in the present moment. There's a particular way in which we need to know what's happening, a particular aim or purpose. But this does give a little bit of a sense for the term, implying a kind of a deliberateness or a clear an intentionality, a conscious recognition of what we're doing. And in fact, elsewhere, it's used that way. This term is used that way, that we can perform or do something, an action, either fully aware of it or not fully aware of it. So again, that sense of the clear comprehension has an aspect of being consciously aware of what is happening while it's happening. Conscious awareness of the present moment. This aspect, you know, aware of what's happening while it's happening, that's often, you know, what we, it may be a shortcut of how we even describe mindfulness. And so, you know, overlaps with how we define or describe or teach the practice of mindfulness. And so the very way we even teach mindfulness already includes this piece. Be aware of what's happening while it's happening. That conscious awareness of what's happening while it's happening, that clear comprehension, may or may not be a kind of an intentional doing of the practice. We can be clearly aware, as mindfulness gets established, as there's a momentum of mindfulness, as there's less effort. And at certain points, mindfulness has such a momentum that we don't need to kind of do that engagement. It's just unfolding. And so we can be consciously aware without doing that conscious awareness. And yet, at times, we do need to bring an intentionality to being aware. This is how we start, and I think this maybe is, you know, in some of the some of the ways that this word is used, kind of the staged ways this word is used, starting with just being aware of your daily activities, you know, be fully aware of your daily activities. At first, we may need to do that very consciously, that phrase or that paragraph on one acts in full awareness when going forward and returning. One acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away. We could replace perhaps that phrase. One is consciously aware when going forward and returning. One is consciously aware when looking ahead and looking away. One is deliberately aware when going forward and returning. One is deliberately aware when looking ahead and looking away. That deliberateness of the practice, that deliberateness of the awareness, is part of what begins to build the momentum. But there is the possibility with that engagement, which is another piece of the definition, that ardency of the mindfulness, the persistence of the mindfulness. As we're more persistent in that, then the establishment of mindfulness it's like it just takes root and I sometimes use the analogy of a scooter with the establishment of mindfulness. And initially, if you're on a scooter, not a motor scooter, but one of those little scooters that the kids use that just has two wheels and a platform and you have to put your foot on the ground and kick on the ground to get the scooter going. You know, at the beginning, when the scooter is still, you have to put your foot on the ground and tap and get the kind of the momentum of the scooter going. And that's the kind of the deliberateness, the engagement at first. But then after a little while, the momentum of that scooter is carrying you. And actually, deliberately putting your foot down would get in the way. But at that point, you can then just be aware that there's the momentum of the scooter. So there can be full awareness of that. You know, clearly knowing, oh, I'm riding. I don't need to put my foot down anymore. And then at some point, you'll start to get a sense of the wobbliness of that scooter and realize, oh, time to put my foot down again. Mindfulness is very like this, that we do need to deliberately connect, remember, aware, be aware, connect with experience, moment after moment. And then at a certain point, there's a little bit of establishment of mindfulness, and the momentum of that carries us. And so we are consciously aware of what's here without needing to deliberately be doing it. And so I think this speaks to some subtle kind of variations in this word, that it carries us from the deliberate engagement through to the conscious awareness of what's happening. An important part of the foundations of mindfulness and the capacity that it supports, the conditions that it supports us to understand how our minds get all wound up in struggle and suffering and stress and reactivity and confusion, is a curiosity about dukkha, about what is skillful in terms of leading us away from dukkha and what is unskillful, what takes us right into dukkha. And so this kind of separation, or this kind of distinction, that kind of the peace of being aware, this curiosity and interest in what is skillful and what is unskillful, what leads to dukkha, what leads away from dukkha. This is brought in with clear comprehension. In certain place in the text, the Buddha says, I don't see a single thing that so causes unarisen, unwholesome states to arise and arisen wholesome qualities to decline as lack of clear comprehension. And so the Buddha points right to clear comprehension as being the place where the ethical understanding of what is skillful and what is unskillful comes into play. And yet, the pointing is not necessarily, it's not to say, oh, unwholesome, I've got to get rid of it, but rather the teaching says, if one understands, for instance, this is one of several things explored here, if one understands desire for the five chords of sensual a pleasure are unabandoned, in that way one has full awareness of that. One has full awareness of the arising of the hindrances. One has full awareness of when the hindrances are abandoned. And so the understanding or the awareness of the wholesome and the unwholesome here is brought into this. And to me, this is kind of like the context, understanding the context of what's happening. And it not only points out to understanding the unwholesome, whether it's present or absent, but also the wholesome. That awareness that there is in attempting to become stable in a state of understanding, the teaching here is pointing to attending to voidness, attending to the recognition of not self. Attending, essentially, we could point to conditionality, various ways of understanding this. While one is giving attention to voidness, when one's mind does not enter into voidness or acquire confidence, steadiness, or decision in that, when one can have full awareness of that. And likewise, having full awareness when one's mind does enter into confidence, steadiness, into that place of insight. So again, full awareness of what the context, what's happening in the mind. Awareness of the mind state. And is it wholesome? Is it unwholesome? Is it leading towards freedom? Is it leading? Is it connected with suffering? So some of these places or some of these aspects of the description of clear comprehension give us various flavors. The deliberateness of being aware, consciously aware of the context of what's arising. Is it wholesome? Is it unwholesome? So all of these are aspects of the full awareness. There's a kind of a definition in one place. All of these other teachings more describe, well, this is somebody having full awareness, you know, somebody having full awareness while doing this, or they have full awareness that this is arising in their mind. In another place, it gives a kind of a practice. How does one exercise clear comprehension? When I found this, it's like, oh, finally, this is what I've been looking for. How do we do this? How do we exercise clear comprehension? It says here, one understands feelings as they arise, as they persist, as they pass away. One understands perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. One understands thoughts as they arise, persist, and pass away. So this can be looked at as a kind of a pointing to recognizing the impermanent nature of experience, in particular around these mental features, feelings, perceptions, thoughts. Could be explored as a kind of an encouragement to, in places, the Buddha said, one should cultivate the perception of impermanence. Cultivate the recognition of feelings as they arise, persist, and pass away. Thoughts as they arise, persist, and pass away. Perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. And it can also be understood as the insight that comes with the establishment of mindfulness. As our mindfulness gets more stable, the simple mindfulness Gil was really speaking of this morning, the mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness, what we do, it's pretty simple. Just knowing this is what's here. Consciously aware of what's here. That's clearly comprehending aspect of mindfulness. As the mindfulness gets more established, as there's more momentum to it, given this kind of curiosity, so the perspective or curiosity of what leads to suffering and what leads away from suffering, the mind, with that curiosity, that orientation, the mind begins to recognize the impermanent nature of experience as a kind of a foundational feature around which we cling, around which clinging creates suffering. And so as the mindfulness gets more established, given the kind of direction or aim of our curiosity to be with experience as experience, feelings as feelings, the impermanent nature of experience can be revealed. So we don't necessarily have to try to see experience as impermanent, to try to watch something arise, persist, and pass away. And yet, the kind of the curiosity of what is this experience as experience can begin to reveal that to us. And so this, I see this this definition almost from two perspectives. One as a kind of a pointer to an aspect of experience that's useful to attune to, the impermanent nature of experience. And the other as this is how, when mindfulness becomes established, how one sees experience. So we could go back to that very first description of mindfulness while reaching, bending, and extending one's arms. And put this little piece in, instead of saying acts in full awareness. One understands feelings, thoughts, and perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away when going forward and returning. One understands feelings as they arise, persist, and pass away while looking ahead and looking away. One understands feelings, thoughts, and perceptions arising, persisting, and passing away while consuming food and tasting, defecating, and urinating. This goes to a much deeper level of being with experience. I mentioned earlier it didn't have to be that close to be very profound. That you could just know that you're talking while you're talking, know that you're walking while you're walking, know that you're reaching while you're reaching, and at that simple level, and the simpleness of that, just the very simplicity of that, begins to create the continuity that opens the mind to being able to see this amazing impermanent flux of our thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. And so we don't necessarily have to do that. So Gil mentioned that we'll be exploring the aspects of clear comprehension from the commentarial perspective, clear comprehension of purpose, of suitability, of domain, and reality. And, you know, the commentaries didn't just make this up. I kind of see the way in which each of these kind of overlays or overlaps with these various flavors of clear comprehension that the suttas point to. Clear comprehension of purpose, understanding, fully aware of our motivation and our intention in practice, our actions in line with our aspirations. This is that deliberateness and recognizing the context, and deliberate awareness and recognizing, is this skillful, is this unskillful? It's connected to this clear comprehension of purpose. Suitability, very similar, is what we're doing suitable for moving the mind in the direction of freedom. Again, with that understanding of what's wholesome, what's unwholesome, recognizing the context of our experience. Clear comprehension of domain, this aspect of what we attend to. What is the domain of our, what is the field, what is the range of our experience, of our mindfulness practice? What's the range of our practice? And in some of these teachings, it pointed to, in a way, the domain doesn't have rigid boundaries. It's not like only certain experiences are within the domain of mindfulness. The domain is created by the ability to clearly comprehend what's happening. And so it's the mentioning that, yes, the arising of aware that desire is not abandoned, that's clear comprehension. And so it's like clear comprehension creates the domain of the experience. When what is arising is clearly comprehended, we are in the domain. We are in the field of mindfulness, of our foundation. And the fourth, clear comprehension of reality, non-delusion. This is pointing to the understanding, the recognition of experience as impermanent, unreliable, not self. Seeing through the misperceptions of the way our minds habitually work. I think this is spoken to by that last piece of fully aware. One exercises clear comprehension, being fully aware of feelings, thoughts, perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. Seeing clearly experience as it is, without filters, views, opinions, or if with filters, views, opinions, those can also be in the domain if they are recognized. Oh, this is a view. This is an opinion that's arising. That's what's happening right now. Instead of then being like lost in the, out of the domain, being caught in that view, clear awareness. Oh, this is the view that's happening. We're right back in the domain of mindfulness again. To just kind of come back to simple. Sometimes a talk like this that goes through suttas and definitions might make the mind start thinking it has to do something. But the practice is really, really simple. We are aware of what's arising. At the beginning, we do need to cultivate some deliberateness of that attention and bring everything into the field by being clearly aware, this is what is arising. That we could say is the simpleness of clear comprehension. Consciously aware of everything that is arising as an arising. And then allowing that establishment of mindfulness. That's the conditions that are necessary for the establishment of mindfulness to lead to wisdom, to lead to understanding, to lead to the mind recognizing how clinging creates suffering, how it can let go. That seeing, what is seen, what can be seen in the continuity of this simple mindfulness is amazingly complex. The workings, the very workings of the mind at the subtlest levels can at times be seen with this continuity of mindfulness. But that's not something we do. The mind that knows that is really simple. And that's the work, establishing that simple awareness so that it can see what's here, can learn, understand how the mind gets hooked. And that understanding is what frees the mind. Not me. Not my idea of how to let go. Understanding is what ultimately frees the mind, lets the mind let go. And so again, it's simple. The practice is simple. Simple, curious. Abide. Abide. Observing. Experience as experience. Engaged. Fully aware. And mindful. Just sit for a moment.